Bhagavad Gita as it is, Chapter 8, Attaining the Supreme, Text Number 22. Purusha-sa-para-partha Bhakta-lavya-stranyanyaya Yasyantakstani-bhutani Yena-sarvam-idam-tatam Purusha, the Supreme Personality. Sa, He. Para, the Supreme. Than whom no one is greater. Partha, O son of Pritha. Bhaktya, by devotional service. Labdya, can be achieved. To, but. Ananyaya, unalloyed, undeviating. Yasya, whom? Antakstani, within. Bhutani, all of this material manifestation. Yena, by whom? Sarvam, all. Idam, whatever we can see. Tatam is pervaded. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead is greater than all, is obtainable by unalloyed devotion. Although He is present in His abode, He is all-pervading and everything is situated within Him. Purport. It is here clearly stated that the supreme destination, for which there is no return, is the abode of Krishna, the Supreme Person. The Brahma Samhita describes the Supreme Abode as Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, a place where everything is full of spiritual bliss. All the variegatedness manifests there as of the quality of spiritual bliss. Nothing there is material. That variegatedness is expanded as the spiritual expansion of the Supreme Godhead Himself, for the manifestation there is totally of the spiritual energy. As explained in Chapter 7, as far as this material world is concerned, although the Lord is always in His supreme abode, He is nonetheless all-pervading by His material energy. So, by His spiritual and material energies, He is present everywhere, both in the material and in the spiritual universes. Yasantakstani means that everything is maintained within Him, within either His spiritual or material energy. The Lord is all-pervading by these two energies. To enter Krishna's supreme abode, or the innumerable Vaikuntha planets, is possible only by bhakti, devotional service, as clearly indicated here by the word bhaktya. No other process can help one obtain that supreme abode. The Vedas, Gopal, Tapani, Upanishad, also describe the supreme abode and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ekos, Vasi, Sarva, Ga, Krishna. In that abode, there is only one Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose name is Krishna. He is a supreme merciful deity, and although situated there as one, He has expanded Himself into millions and millions of plenary expansions. The Vedas compare the Lord to a tree standing still yet bearing many varieties of fruits, flowers and changing leaves. The plenary expansions of the Lord who preside over the Vaikuntha planets are four-armed, and they are known as by a variety of names. Purushottam, Trivikrama, Keshava, Madhava, Aniruddha, Rishikesh, Sankarshan, Pradumna, Sridhar, Vasudev, Damodar, Janardhan, Narayan, Vamana, Padmanabha, etc. The Brahma Samhita 537 also confirms that although the Lord is always in the supreme abode, Goloka Vrindavan, He is all-pervading, so that everything is going on nicely. Goloka eva nivisat yakilatma bhutaha. As stated in the Vedas, Svetasupatana Upanishad 6.8, Parashya Shaktira Vividaiva Shuyate Svabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. His energies are so expansive that they systematically conduct everything in the cosmic manifestation without a floor, although the Supreme Lord is far, far away. Purusha sapara parta bhakti alaba swananyaya isantakstani bhutani yena sarvamidam didam. Supreme Personality of Godhead is greater than all, is obtainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him. Here Krishna is mentioning about his abode in the spiritual world, or his abodes, where there's Jnanardhan, Trivikram, Purushottam, Padmanabha, etc. Now we're hardly conscious of Krishna here. What to speak of trying to accept that there is some planet which is in the form of a lotus flower, where all the Vaikuntha planets, with all the unlimited expansions of Krishna with four arms, are all situated, and all those Vaikuntha planets can all fit into the Goloka of Vrindavan. So, we don't even know who we are. We don't even know we're not this body yet. Our experience of Krishna, as best can be described, is probably limited. Yet there has to be, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, and he includes these things in it about his spiritual planet. Obviously, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't explain very much about his spiritual planet. And in the purport, Prabhupada doesn't explain too much about it either, except that it's made out of spiritual bliss. Now the point is, we're supposed to become blissful. That unless one is blissful, or let's say, bliss may be a further development of at least, unless we're free from anxiety. Let's start with that. Something which is doable. We just can't make ourselves blissful. We decide, today I read Bhagavad Gita, I'm supposed to be blissful, so I'm doing devotional service, so I should be blissful. Yes, we should be happy. We should understand what we're doing. And when the thoughts that put us in anxiety come to our mind, we should just ignore them, thinking that this is simply a product of the illusory energy. Actually, I'm eternal, and by these activities, although I haven't realized what spiritual life is actually like, but at least I can act accordingly and get some experience in Krishna consciousness up to my level of potential right now, or up to the level that Krishna is willing to reveal himself. But at least we have to accept the basic philosophy that I'm not this body, and that Krishna, as it says here, he's all-pervading. It's not that he's only in the spiritual world and in Goloka Vrindavan or in Vaikuntha, but he's everywhere in this world. And therefore, devotional service never goes in vain, and becoming conscious of Krishna means that we can perform our service successfully, whatever we're doing. In other words, if we have no faith that Krishna is everywhere, then we'll forget about him. We won't rely upon him. We'll think, well, what's the sense of relying upon Krishna? He's so far away, he wouldn't hear me. Besides that, my voice is not that strong. He'll never hear me, no matter how much I shout. Unless we accept that he's in our heart, and he's giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, and as much as I turn to him, then he'll reciprocate if we depend upon him. He's dependable. And if we don't depend upon him, then we'll never know he's existing, because he'll never reciprocate with us, because we're not depending on him. Therefore, one of the processes is vandana, prayers. But prayers have to be done with faith. Similarly, the chanting Hare Krishna has to be done with faith. Everything has to be done with faith. But faith is based upon two things. One of them is knowledge. At least we should intellectually understand Krishna's existence, and that will give us some faith. And the second thing is experience. That is, if we understand things properly, and then know what to do in order to please Krishna, we know what his mission is, we know what he wants us to do, and we do it in order to please him, and he reciprocates, then our faith develops. Because if you keep on doing the same thing over and over again and you never get any result, then after a while, unless you realize you're doing the wrong thing, or you'll just go mad. In other words, one of the definitions of madness is to continuously do the same thing and get the same result and think that next time I'm going to get a different result. That's material existence. Everyone's doing punak punas charvata charvananam. Everyone's doing the same thing and getting the same result, and they're thinking this time is going to be different. So on the other hand, our process is, first of all, develop some vision. And as we develop some vision of what's actually going on, not according to our imagination, because we already have that vision. But unfortunately, that vision, our imaginary vision, a reality, which is not, we can't give ourselves too much credit for creating it. It's a gift of the illusory energy. The illusory energy is kindly giving us a vision, which we're taking credit for, which is another part of our ignorance. But according to the modes of nature we're situated on, we've been put into a body conditioned by the material energy, and along with that conditioning, we're given a certain conception of life. It's not completely wrong. It's just incomplete. And because it's incomplete, therefore we're working blindly, hoping for to get the best results, but blind. Now, Krishna Bhagavad Gita begins with trying to explain to us that we're not this body, that we're eternal. So, generally speaking, we should take that seriously. So it's not something, well, all right, I read the Bhagavad Gita, I've gone on that verse. What's next? Well, the next thing is to go back and read it and take it seriously. Because unless we take it seriously, then we'll simply remain on the material platform. The next thing, if we take it seriously, then we have to think about, all right, there's also Krishna, and he happens to be eternal. He happens to be the proprietor of everything. And I'm actually not the proprietor of anything. So my next thing is how much I'm going to be sincere and actually inquiring from Krishna through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra what he wants me to do with his energy. Now, if I'm not prepared to do that, I'm not prepared to become spiritual either. At least those two things have to be there. If we want to get out of the modes of ignorance, that I am the doer, I am the proprietor, I am this body, then we have to be prepared to accept something different than our normal conception of life. Unless we come to the conclusion, since I'm not the proprietor, now I have to actually sincerely find out what Krishna wants me to do. And lo and behold, one of the things Krishna wants us to do is become Krishna conscious. Surprise. But to become Krishna conscious, Krishna wants us to do some service. Bhakti mama vijananti. So what's that service? Well, here we have this service. We're actually all doing service right now. But is that it? People have been coming to these classes so long for decades. Nothing's happening sometimes. Yes, something's happening. They're becoming more into illusion sometimes. Or sometimes they're just treading water. So the whole class has a purpose, that we're Krishna's servants. But what does Krishna want us to do? Actually, Krishna never kept it a secret that it's very difficult. Krishna wants us to spread Krishna consciousness. Surprise. Now we can make it very, very simple that whoever we meet, because not every one of us is going to go on book distribution, Harinam. I hope you didn't kill anything. What's that? So we're not always going to go on book distribution, but we should dedicate some energy. We should be in that mood. Whoever we meet, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, we should think about what I can do to help them become Krishna conscious. It's not that there's two fields. There's one reality. There's one, the field of devotional service outside the temple. When I go and try and give someone a book, then I'm doing some service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when I'm on a Harinam chanting, trying to bring my mind into the chanting, then I'm doing something spiritual. And everywhere else, who knows what it is. It's all a free-for-all. Toss a coin up and maybe it'll come up Krishna on the the other side is Maya. Now we have to see how to engage in Krishna service under any circumstance. But the fact is we have to do something for Krishna's mission. Otherwise, what are we going to do in the spiritual world? Krishna has a mission there also to make everyone blissful. Krishna's mission is to give everyone bliss. He's in love with everyone. He wants to make everyone happy. And everyone's mission there is to make Krishna happy and make everyone else happy. So that's our same mission here. Now, if we think, well, let me make people happy. I'll give them some money. I'll give them some honor. I'll give them... Well, that's not Krishna's mission. Krishna's mission is to give everyone Krishna consciousness. Now, that may mean distributing prasadam, making people happy in some way, different ways. It's quite a broad thing. But that's the mission, to remind people about Krishna. Because that's what makes people happy in the spiritual world too, Krishna. And what makes Krishna happy in the spiritual world is when everyone is happy, that they're happy in his association. Krishna is happy to see others happy, and everyone's happy to see Krishna happy. So that's the same thing here. So unless we accept that principle here, and then if we accept that principle, everything becomes simpler, then our path becomes clearer. And if we don't accept it, everything is very complicated and confusing, and we don't know why I can't make the amount of spiritual advancement I should be making, because we don't surrender. We think surrender means someone tells me to do something, and reluctantly I do it. Or I do it enthusiastically, or whatever. But actually, surrender means to find out, use our own intelligence, to find out how to focus my mind on Krishna and Krishna's mission, and then Krishna will give us the intelligence to do it, and we don't need someone looking over our shoulder all the time to tell us what to do. Actually, Krishna will tell us what to do. We'll know what to do. And then when we do it, then Krishna will reciprocate with us. And then we gradually make some progress towards the goal of life. Then we'll understand that there is a spiritual world, because this world will turn into a spiritual world if we're doing devotional service. Otherwise, it doesn't mean little for us whether there's planets made out of lotus flowers or effulgent, whatever. I mean, because we're in Maya, so what are we going to understand what those things are like? So we have to be in Krishna consciousness here. This is our opportunity. These things are given to us, this understanding, so we know what our goal is. But then we have to take the first step. It may be true that there's a place called Zagreb, and say we were supposed to go there. But you have to take a step towards there. If you hear about Zagreb, then at least you know why you should go there. But in order to get there, you have to take a step where you are now. Otherwise, you'll never get there. So in the same way, we have to know what to do here in order to get there. And if we take some steps here and we actually find ourselves in a different state of consciousness, we actually understand more clearly who we are, what we're supposed to be doing, how to get the intelligence from Krishna, what to do. And we follow it, and Krishna reciprocates specifically to do things that will help remind us of Krishna and to expand his mission, to help everyone, whoever we meet, become Krishna conscious, remind them of Krishna in some way. Then we'll understand how to make this world into a spiritual world. And as much as we experience this world as a spiritual world, then we'll know that there's another world, the spiritual world. It's just like when Nanda Maharaj and the residents of Vrindavan, they heard that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they heard that there's a spiritual world, and that they had some idea that they might be going there. So they asked Krishna if he can show them. So he took them to Akura Ghat, and he showed them all the Vaikuntha planets in the Akura Ghat. And then they said, oh, there they saw, there's Krishna and there's me. And he said, well, that's where we're going. Other than that, they were just blissful serving Krishna here. They weren't even thinking about the spiritual world, because they're already in the spiritual world. But when they became curious, Krishna showed them the spiritual world. So Krishna is telling us about the spiritual world, for those who have some interest, that this is not the only world, But here we have to make it into a spiritual world, and then we'll understand what the spiritual world is, actually is, beyond this place. Any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for this lecture. In this verse, it's also mentioned Purushottama, and today Purushottama month starts, so I was wondering if you could say a couple of glories of this month, or this word at least. Thank you.
Well, we'll find out what this month is like as we perform devotional service here. There's some rumor, I guess you get some extra special credit, but then Purushottama is actually there because we're using the moon calendar. And so the moon calendar only has 30 days in it. But we have another calendar which people take, also utilize, which is based upon, I guess, the equinox. And that has that usually has at least, I think, 4 or 5 extra days in it. Maybe 6 extra days. 30 days has September, April, June, and November. 30 days has September, April, June, and November. So there's 4 months that have 30 days, and at least 7 days with 31 days. So we have to, in order to adjust it to the present calendar, they add an extra month called Purushottama.
That's every 4 years?
What's that?
That is every year or every 4 years?
Every 3 years, I believe.
Every
3 years. So 3 times 7 is 21. So it makes up for the extra month. So that's basically it. And as usual, you know, there's some story behind it. If you go into they had this book called Ekadasi, and tells you all the credit you get from following this Ekadasi or that Ekadasi. Karmakanda, it's actually part of the Karmakanda. Because otherwise people don't do anything unless they think they're going to get some material credit for it, or some credit. So this may have some special spiritual value this month, but actually it's it's serving the Sankirtan movement, doing our sadhana better, spreading Krishna consciousness more seriously. This is what actually has the potency, not just living through another month called Purushottama. Anyhow, you experience that your rounds are better in this month, then that's nice. If you can chant your rounds. If you can't chant your rounds better in this month, then where is the spiritual potency? In other words, our whole basis practically of our spiritual advancement is offenselessly chanting Hare Krishna. And if we can offenselessly chant Hare Krishna, you know, our spiritual advancement is going to be minimal. Of course, we can improve our relationship with the devotees. We can worship the deities more sincerely. But eventually it's going to show up in how much offenselessly we're chanting the holy name, because that's the process in this age. So let me know at the end of the month if this was a powerful month for chanting your japa. And then if it is, that will be the value of this special month. In any case, you'll be offering some candles, so you have a little extra service to do. Other than that, I don't know. The only difference with this month, I know, is that there's no holiday in this month. It's because it's an extra month. Only Ekadasi is observed. There's no other festival. And the next month, I guess, is Kartik. And there's some special glorification, some special services and vows taken. And there is specifically in the Nectar of Devotion, glorifying the month of Kartik. But there's nothing in Nectar of Devotion glorifying Purushottama month.
I received one newsletter and it says that one is supposed to offer 33 candles per day. So I was wondering, what's the significance of this number?
What, who maybe whoever put out the newsletter is selling candles.
ISKCON's got a new factory.
I mean, the real thing is how much we focus our attention on Krishna and give our love to him. Unless we're doing that, these things are just, you know, it's kind of, what does it have to do with? If it helps you focus your mind on the Krishna and give your love to him, then it has some value. Otherwise, we don't understand it, you know. We're just offering a candle, 10 candles, 100 candles, what's the difference?
Yeah, because some practices, some rituals, like You just do, but you blindly follow. You don't really understand the significance. Like
everything we're doing is smart.
4, 2, 3, 7, or 33.
Well, there are some standards.
Uh-huh.
In deity worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the focus your attention, because otherwise people just go wild. They're so creative. You know, wind up. You know, therefore, some standards so people can control their minds. And do what they're supposed to do, which is focus on the deity or on the pure devotee. Not just, you know, put on a big show of how wonderful they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then everyone's focusing, you know, wow, look at him. They're focusing all the attention on the person doing the arti rather than the person they're doing the arti to. So we have some rules and regulations. But otherwise, 33 candles, I don't know. You have to ask the person who sent out the newsletter. I have no idea. I'm just hoping to remember Krishna somehow or another.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Maharaj, you were saying that anyway, we cannot understand this description of spiritual world, whatever would be written there. Because we are in illusion. And our main task is to see this world as spiritual through service. So that will help us understand the spiritual world, the whole spiritual world. So, but my question is still some information are there? Is some information is there on spiritual world? And it seems rather strange why, for example, Brahma would use such enticement, or it looks like some enticement, like cow can give whatever milk you want, and the wolves are, I mean, I don't care about those things. And
it's a reality.
For poor people.
Well, that's what it was like in the spiritual world. Shriya Kanta, Kanta, Parama Purusha. That's what it's like. He's not giving some enticement. That is what the spiritual world is like. It's not an exaggeration, but we have no idea what, you know. If you happen to be situated like Raghunath Das Goswami, you can go and visit the spiritual world. Then you can say, but you have to be on a certain level of consciousness to actually experience what the spiritual world is. You have to be spiritual to experience the spiritual world. You can't have any material conception and know what the spiritual world actually is. But we can get some glimpse. Therefore, we chant Hare Krishna, we get some taste. Because Krishna is, we experience Krishna, then we're experiencing the spiritual world. Because wherever Krishna is, that's the spiritual world. So as much as we offenselessly chant the Hare Krishna mantra, to that extent, we experience what the spiritual world is. This world is also part of the spiritual world. But because our consciousness is covered by illusion, we think it's not, it's some other world.
But for example, why Brahma didn't tell something which would show nice Krishna's qualities through some relations? That would be greater enticement, at least for me, to go there.
Well, Brahma, it was 100 books. We only have one. We only have
So maybe there are in others.
I don't know. I haven't read them. They're not even around anymore. But anyhow, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt this was an important book. It's a summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you want to find out these other things, they're in the Bhagavatam. But Brahma, we only have the fifth chapter of 100. Kali Yuga. Anyhow, people won't even read the fifth chapter. What to speak of that 100? Of course, we could distribute more books that way, but we have enough books to distribute anyhow. And besides that, even Srimad Bhagavatam, we have 18,000 verses. And the higher planetary systems, they have hundreds and thousands and millions of verses. They have more time to read. We have no idea what's actually the extent of what Krishna consciousness really is. But we can get the quality, that's the important thing. We don't have to have all the details. We have to find out the process so we can enter into spiritual life. Then these other things will be revealed also. All right. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.